Tonight we're talking about The Witch from, I guess we decided, 2015. This was a sort of sleeper horror movie type of thing that I think had pretty smart marketing in some respect because, I mean, I don't know smart marketing because I probably didn't really know much about it, but what you get about it and what you hear about it, like even listening to the Film Junk podcast when they talked about it, I still wasn't sure how much of a straight-up horror movie this even was. Going into it, I was like, is this going to be more like, almost like The Babadook, you know, where it's a lot of it is sort of this, I think if you've got the psychological caveat side, then it elevates stuff from, you know, trashy horror or whatever, you know, VOD trash type stuff.
Absolutely. I just picked up The Witch like last week, and ironically, I also picked up The Babadook, but I think you hit the nail on the head in regards to, it's just all about mood. It's like, I didn't find The Witch like particularly scary or anything, but it's unsettling.
Oh yeah.
Like unsettling, like Silence of the Lambs is unsettling. I'm not scared watching it or anything like that. It's more just like, ugh, this kind of makes me feel kind of gross.
Yeah.
I want to take a shower afterwards.
And gross kind of gross thing. Is a good word. There's a few gross out moments for sure. For me, yeah, I mean, I think I picked the perfect time. I watched it late. I'm alone.
Yeah, you live up in the woods.
Yeah.
I was thinking about you. I was like, man, God, yeah, I would hate to live up in the woods, isolated. It's like, there is a lot of that psychological problems with solitude.
Yeah, it's a very, like, this thing almost could be a play because it's very much like essentially a one location, small cast. And then, you know, here you go. Okay, so first off, spoiler alert, we're going to spoil The Witch. I got to remember to say that. And so I'd say less so than The Babadook, which has like a very reasonable argument for it being a pure psychological thriller. I think even so, even despite some things, The Witch doesn't waste a lot of time in kind of establishing some sort of an outward threat. And that was something that surprised me. You know, so you've got not to belabor the plot, but you basically got some, I don't know what they'd be, Puritans, whatever.
Yep.
You know, get exiled from Jonestown because the father is too pridefully devout and thinks that there's some sort of inherent corruption that's going on in their community. And so they sort of exile him, or he is makes that decision to leave. So him and his family pack up their cart and they just roll into the woods. And it's this, you know, what is it, supposed to be 16-something? So this is...
Yeah, I mean, they said 17th century,
right,
like
yeah.
In the Back to the Features, behind the scenes stuff.
Right.
But yeah, no, I agree. It jumps right in, and I'll always give credit where credit's due in regards to that. Like, boom, you know, the spoiler alert. Once the baby's gone in like 15 minutes, and I'm like, oh damn, this is starting faster. And this is my second time watching it,
right.
But I didn't remember that it started off that fast when I saw it in the theater. But yeah, no, and they set that tone so well. I mean, it's shot really cool. It looks like a Fincher kind of dark looking cinematography with amazing like sets and costumes and stuff that really just kind of sucks you into this 17th century, you know, New England folk tale that's about to get real freaky.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it sells that idea, and you've got the isolation. So I mean, just like, so they're exiled, right, at the very beginning. And in that time period is already scary enough. I mean, like, it literally is like, okay, so just being out there.
No community.
Being,
yeah.
You know, in the cold, in the, you know, in the wilderness with the creatures and the, you know, the wolves howling. And I mean, you know, you might have, you know, Native Americans attacking you. I don't know. They never really get into much of that at all. That's not really the story. But they settle and they create their little shack and have their goats and have their little area and just trying to get by, trying to grow something, trying to grow food and hunt. And there's the woods right next to them, and the woods are creepy as hell. Like you said, it's shot definitely with kind of a stark, harsh black, you know, crushing black Fincher quality to it, which I think is appropriate. It doesn't feel, nothing about it feels, obscenely stylized, so it doesn't, you know, betray that, like I said, that immersive sort of sense of being there with these characters in this time period. It doesn't feel out of place, you know, like it's not like there's green filters or, you know, it doesn't look like Tony Scott RIP, you know, shot it or anything. And yeah, you know, so she's, you know, the main character I'd say is the young girl.
Thomason.
And it starts with a shot of her, you know, watching her father give this speech, and sort of, so you're getting her perspective immediately on, okay, I guess we're going to be leaving this community, and kind of like, that's kind of scary. And then, you know, there's the newborn baby, and she's taking care of the baby for her mother, and she's playing peekaboo with the baby out by the edge of the woods. And then one time she closes her own eyes and opens them, and the baby's gone. Already you're scared, already like, oh shit, because it's an oh shit moment. You've identified enough with her, and just that idea of the transition. It's like one of the few times in the whole story, too, because everything is really like, these are Puritans. They're all very kind of repressed and proper. Like, it's one of the few times she's smiling and being playful is with this little innocent baby. And so you get that switch so quickly that that just alone, like, oh God, where's this child? Like, did an animal take it? What happened? It's very harsh. And then, like you said, to jump right into it, cut to the woods, and those long tracking shots in the woods are also really scary. You know, it's like something out of Predator or something in a weird way. You know, it's like the idea that these woods are, you know, they surround you, and they, you know, they set the tone, set the mood, set the atmosphere, and you've got this scarlet red hooded figure, and the music is real sparse, I'd say, too. Would you agree?
Absolutely. It's just kind of garnished here and there, and it's like a just choir and maybe some like crazy sort of strings kind of moments where it's like they're rubbing an oboe right at the right moment or whatever, when it's real creepy. So it does create that mood. And like you said, when it jumps right in after the baby just disappears, like that's the one point that I would say is kind of scary or unsettling, as I would say. As stupid as Labyrinth is, like I think that has always like maybe gotten to me, shook me to my core. I'm like, when a baby is stolen, that just creeps me out. It's not a scary thing, but it's just like, oh my God, someone took someone else's baby. I don't know. It's one of those things that just kind of
I feel like
makes me feel just kind of icky, like I mentioned.
Right. And in a weird way, baby represents like a life. It represents innocence. It represents a whole life, you know, like, it's at its beginning, so it's intrinsically got more value in a weird way, because it could become something, you know, well, who knows what it could become. But then there's that other weird side of it's like, but it just started, make another one. And like that thought that always enters my mind when something like that happens, like, is almost more unsettling. It's like my own sort of dark side of like, fuck it, it's a baby, it's dead.
They did get over that thing's disappearance real fast.
In a weird way, they sort of did, but I think, like, of the period, it makes sense, because, like, I'll bet, you know, percentage of children, that, I mean, who's to say that kid was gonna live anyway?
That's a good point.
And that's, like, that ends up becoming kind of an interesting thing. But, so, like you said, and I'll admit, I'm way more of a fraidy cat, probably because I let myself be, especially, you know, and I create the environment for it out here in the, you know, woods, which isn't super isolated. I'm not going to oversell that. But, you know, just being in a dark house on your own and with those strings being crazy, and it's like, oh, wait, so they're, okay, so somebody did, so it's not an animal. They're not going to keep this a mystery. Somebody, you know, watching the movie, knowing very little about it, somebody did take it, and, you know, it looks like it's a person. It's like, this kind of seems like it could be a quote unquote witch. And then they just stay with that character. And it, like you said, it gets dark and it gets twisted, and it's, you know, naked woman, you know, huddled in a corner, or, you know, mashing up baby to do something creepy with it.
And I got got the impression she was rubbing baby blood all over her broomstick. Did you get that impression?
It was all over something, or herself, or something.
Well, she was rubbing it on her breasts as well as, like, on a stick or something. And then, like, the E.T. shot of the witch or whatever, I got the impression she was flying off or something. And I was just like, well, I didn't remember that from the theater.
It seemed a little cheesy.
It was almost like it was one of those things where they shouldn't have shown so much, maybe not that early. Like, they should have shown, like, the knife and cut right there and then, like, back to the camp or something rather than the...
I think I agree with that. I don't remember the moonshot having, like, the ET level thing. But maybe I just wasn't able to see, because sometimes when, you know, they hold on a shot, and I'm like, okay, it's the moon. And I'm like, okay, you're still showing it. Is there something else I'm supposed to see here? It just looks like silhouettes of things. I didn't catch that. I mean, if that's really there, then, like, eek, that is bad.
When did you see it last?
I just saw it that once, like, about a month and a half ago. Or, no, I saw it real close to Halloween, so...
Okay.
Probably.
All right. So it's been a while since you've seen it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I just saw it this morning, so...
Yeah. So if you saw, like, a witch E.T. over the moon, then I'm like,
the only
whoa.
Thing that's similar to E.T. is it just rises up and the moon is in the background. That's it. So it's just standard silhouette. It wasn't...
Might have been the floating, because they do have the levitation stuff later.
Yeah. Okay. No, it was definitely flying or floating or something.
Okay,
which...
crazy. Yeah, I agree with you, though. Yeah, like cutting right with the knife probably would have been...
Yeah, knife is just touching the baby's skin and then cut. You know, keep it creepy like that. Don't show me the blood splattering.
Yeah, that's where it kind of is like, oh, this is maybe first-time director not being confident enough and being like, well, we're making a horror movie and those always sell, but we're making an unconventional horror movie... I don't know,
but they still never show her face or anything like that, right, so they're still kind of hiding it, but I hear you, it might be a first-time director stuff.
I mean, I can see it either way. Like, in one way, you kind of get like, oh, no, they're making it abundantly clear, that kid is dead, and this is some creepy old lady doing weird-ass shit in the woods, and this is happening in those woods that those people still live next to, and so everything else... henceforth is going to be in that context.
Fair point.
Like I said, even with the knife, like, you would still, that's all still there. So I agree. I think we both agree that this would have been a less is more situation as a nitpick for it. So then it's just mostly kind of like almost like its own little mini witch trial where it's, I'm not going to get too deep into the, like, you know, feminist undertones or any of that stuff about, like, you know, the young girl being treated almost like she, you know, like she's sort of a property that can be bartered off and the way that she kind of has to react to the children and scares them and the fact that, you know, her dad lets her get in trouble for something she didn't do, stealing the, you know, silver cup.
Yeah.
And then the fact that the silver cup and all that sort of points to sort of a materialistic hypocrisy that exists among these apparently very devout, you know, sparse living people.
Yeah, it essentially just goes from there into just the destruction of the family.
Yeah, the family
where they're all turning against each other, essentially, and yeah. But done in a great way. I feel like the little boy was he had a really good performance too. The older boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he was just sort of trying to do right by his dad and by his faith and everything. And I feel like as much as they sort of do turn, like the dad admits he's wrong. He cops to, you know, ultimately realizing that he was being prideful. I mean, a lot of shit goes down before then, and I think it's, you know, just that the reality of, like, what are they going to do? They got no food. They got, you know, things are disappearing. And
yeah. So and another thing I would add is I watched this on subtitles, which is extremely helpful from, you know, the way, you know, a 17th century Puritan from England would talk. So the dialogue is, you know, kind of Shakespearean sort of, but subtitles helped a lot, as well as this movie's extremely quiet. So like, I couldn't sleep last night, and I woke up at, you know, 5:30 and turned this on, you know, with my wife and kids still asleep. Like, I would get in trouble if I, if they caught, if my four-year-old saw this shit. But you really benefit from a watch where you have privacy. It is quiet, and subtitles really help me as well, because the gravelly, like, old man's voice, the father, is sometimes really hard to, you know, get very exactly hard. What he's saying, because he talks fast too. So
yeah,
there's a pro tip for you.
Yeah, I would not be averse to that tip. I mean, obviously, it never hurts to say if this movie's worth watching, it's worth paying attention to, you know. So yeah,
yeah.
And you're right. I mean, if you're going to try to be engaged on a level that will affect you emotionally or do any of those kinds of things, then, you know, you got to be engaged. And so you're right. The language barrier thing is a bit tricky. I didn't see it. I watched it on Amazon streaming. Maybe you can activate subtitles. I was just kind of going to power through it because I'm really, like, you know, a real Philistine, and I enjoy a good foreign movie every now and again, but I have trouble with it. Like, I can't eat and watch a foreign movie because I can't read and eat at the same time.
Yeah, I'm like that. I'm like that too. I can't, like, just play on my phone or anything because I'll just be behind.
Well, obviously, yeah, you can't do that because you're not hearing it. And it's still tough for me. I mean, I'm borderline illiterate, and that's why I prefer movies. But, like, if I'm looking at that bottom, and I'm sure there's studies, I'm sure there's, like, factual, like, there's gotta be. There's no way you're getting as much out of the actual movie, out of the visuals, if you're watching something with subtitles. Because that bottom fifth is what your eye is gonna be at so much, and then you gotta jump up. And even if you're still seeing it, just from, like, you know, art theory, like, where's your eye supposed to be drawn? Your eye is not supposed to be drawn to the bottom necessarily, because that's where the words are when the subtitles are on. So I'm not admonishing subtitles. I'm just saying that, for, you know, that's why I mostly watch anime as dubs, because, well, one, I could give a shit about, like, minor translations and things like that. But
I more would say, you know, for a rewatch, subtitles are.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no. And I'm not saying people shouldn't do it. I'm just saying that it's another, for me at least, it can be a pretty bad barrier. So I powered through it, and I kind of, the upshot of it, or at least as I could rationalize it to myself, was that, not understanding half of what was being said, you still kind of get just the general kind of behavior and actions, and it still works. And you can understand almost everything that the main character, Thomason, is saying.
Yeah.
And she's fairly, like I said, fairly sympathetic in it. And so, I mean, yeah, I mean, we can kind of power through this plot bit real quick. I mean, so basically it gets to the point where the little boy, not the littlest boy, there's two little twins, little boy and girl, and they're just being weird and being mean. And so Thomason, like, you know, tells them that she, you know, is a witch. And they're saying that they've talked to the witch already, you know, this woman in red or something. So you're like, oh, that's, I guess, possible. Like, they're probably not making anything up. Maybe the witch is already starting to corrupt the little kids. And we haven't seen this, and we don't see this, so who knows?
Yeah, they've been talking to the goat.
Yeah. And Black Phillip, which, I mean, like, come on. You're gonna, really? That's the name of the goat? Okay. Such a scary name for a goat.
It is creepy. Like, I do like the goat. The goat's fantastic.
So, you know, Thomason sort of spins a yarn about how she's made a deal with the witch and she's, you know, evil. And my take on that is that she is just doing what I do sometimes, which can get me in trouble, which is if people are annoying me or bugging me or being gross or weird, I just try to outdo them to the point where they just, like, run away crying and feel ashamed about existence or whatever.
You double down, yeah.
I double or sometimes triple down, you know? It's like, oh, you're gonna pull a your mom on me? Okay, well, let's do this. Let's do this. So I get that's what I think that's what she's doing there. She's just, you know, I believe that she's essentially fairly innocent throughout this whole story, and that's what makes her character more sympathetic. It's kind of like, you know, Decker not being a replicant, those kinds of things. And so then that gets her in trouble at some point with her parents, and she's like, no, I'm just, you know, bullshitting them. And then, and I might be getting the the time frame off a little, but then the little boy takes off.
Well,
to go do something. Right?
The cup goes missing. Their crops go bad, and then they have the dinner where there's like the beginning of falling out or whatever. And Caleb, you know, the young boy, tries to go off in the woods the next morning. Thomason catches him and goes with him, and essentially he gets lost, I guess.
Yeah, they get separated because of the he's trying to chase after the demonic rabbit, which is the rabbit's scary, right, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, it was like the Monty Python rabbit.
Yeah. Good point. And so Thomason ends up back without Caleb, and Caleb's lost in the woods. And you could just do another, you know, don't show us what's going on. Caleb's lost in the woods.
No, but they double down.
They do. And they double down. And honestly, like, that part to me, like, is scary. Like, I let myself be scared. You know what I mean? I'm watching a horror movie. I'm going to let myself get scared by the monsters or whatever sometimes.
Yeah.
And I've kind of gotten to the point where, like, I've had weird back and forth relationship, like a love hate relationship with horror movies as I've gotten older and stuff. And I'm kind of just like, so he's crawling through the twisted branches and shit. And almost like he's going to get like stuck in that, you know, like something out of a horrible nightmare that you would have where like you have to get through these thick woods, like a Mirkwood hobbit kind of, it's just scary. It's just painful and scratching you and whatever else. And then, you know, he arrives at like, there's this cabin and there's a fireplace and there's smoke coming out of it. A warm, cozy little cabin sort of built into a tree or whatever. Is it kind of built into something?
I think it had like the roof looked like kind of like a hobbit house where like moss and grass and shit is growing on the roof.
Yeah,
so it's like,
say.
It's like hobbled into the earth or whatever. But yeah, it's like, it's obvious that it's like populated by someone. You see a chimney or whatever with, you know, smoke coming out of it. And again, I think that's an area where, you know, maybe they could have cut. I think that's creepy as fuck enough. Like, they could have just, he opens a door and something grabs him and you don't see the witch or whatever. Right. But they kind of, they keep going. They show that, they've already shown, you know, teased out little bits of him, like, catching peeks at his sister's breasts or whatever, and know he's kind of prepubescent getting into it, and so they've got to have like the witch manifesting herself as like some hot number out in the woods.
Yeah, and that's what happens there, the hot number in the woods. And that's so I guess, like, if you wanted to get into the, you know, all that male gaze, feminine allure, all that nifty feminist film criticism stuff, you could just, That's a hefty meal right there. Like you said, you could cut away at just the shot of the house. To me, that's the scariest part.
Yeah.
Once the door opens, you're kind of at a foregone. It's almost like the wolf might as well be like, he's not going to be able to run away.
Yeah.
He's not going to get away. Like, but it does have a couple of its, you know, horror movie moments with like the gross hand that comes up like to grab his head and like, okay, yeah.
That was a little bit creepy, sure.
Yeah, so that part to me is probably the scariest part in the whole story. Just, I think, because the idea of, like, for me, like, personally, like, I could just go, I mean, I live in the Redwood Forest, and it's not the same kind of level of creepy, but I could just, in 10 minutes, be, just keep walking and walking up the hill there and be essentially kind of lost and a little bit scared for a moment and be like, I hope a mountain lion doesn't pounce on me. Oh gosh. Oh golly. You know? And then like, if I saw a house like that, be like, this was here the whole time.
I mean, the fear of the witch is like, they create a great mood for it, but it's like, I felt like the other stuff that could have been creepy could have had the creep factor up a little bit, like the isolation a little more. I mean, the winter coming, and you know, that must have been terrifying. Like, anybody who saw The Revenant, you know, just wild can kill you, being lost can kill you, you know, all those things should have like been compounding things along with this creepy supernatural thing.
It does take a back burner to the, you know, supernatural horror element, all those natural things, you're right.
Sure.
They set that mood and set that tone of the isolation, and then it stays that way, but I guess maybe they don't hit it enough. I mean, you're right. They mentioned that he trades the cup, the silver cup, with like a Native American for some food or something, and that's how they, or for the hunting supplies.
Yeah, I don't remember what he traded it for, but
I feel like seeing that, if that had been a scene and maybe they cut it, there that would have helped underscore that isolation a little more, because sometimes you don't get it unless you have somebody come in, you know, somebody else that's new, and then you're like, oh, okay, that's right, there's other people here. And then, I mean, obviously they could have had him convey something about there being something untoward out there that he's scared of.
Yeah,
would have reinforced that too. I don't know.
That would have worked against the isolationism type stuff if there's other people that they can barter with or whatever. So I don't know. I don't think there were any deleted scenes in the special feature stuff on the Blu-ray I bought. So, and I got the impression from the Q&A and the little making of videos, which I also watched, that this guy really, like, he had everything, you know, storyboarded out and planned out in his head. He was like, he was being, you know, praised by all these historians as like everything was properly accurate, like way better than like historians that are like consultants on other movies similar. Like they had some guy from like The Crucible or some other old period movie that would call out like all the flaws in it compared to this, which was like, you know, amazing. So it was a bunch of Salem historians, cool, both about like what witches were like, what you know, the community was like then, as well as like all those other little details of, you know, the buildings, the costume or the clothing, all that kind of stuff. So it was seen as very historically accurate. And I think that all kind of like we said earlier, creates that mood and really draws you into this is a real world kind of stuff. So
absolutely. It goes a long way. So, okay. So yeah, so the boy's lost. The boy's been captured by the evil witch who we already saw kill a baby. So as far as we're concerned, that kid's done. And then the more family drama, and then the boy shows up, but he's like in a catatonic state. And then he has a prayer and spits out a rotten apple. It's like Snow White or something for a second there. And then the little kids have a freak out, and then everybody's just kind of flipping out, and the dad throws, you know, here's the daughter was saying, the Thomason was saying that she'd made a deal with the witch, and so he wants to blame her, but I think it's more just his own frustration about putting his family in this position in the first place, in a lot of ways, that he's projecting onto her. Because I feel like his relationship with her is it's not a lot of depth there, but there's enough that you see that, like, he's not just being super overbearing and, like, trying to blame everything on her.
Yeah.
All of that, like he struggles with a lot of it, and then I think towards the end he does have a almost moment of like redemption where he's at least admitting to himself that it was his pride that did this, and you know, so he's got the kids all locked in the goat cage, and then they go to sleep, and then shit gets real and shit goes down, and then the evil naked witch from the beginning shows up and eats the other goat, and then the dad wakes up and the mom's had her breast pecked at by a crow because she had a hallucination.
And I think the twins, I rewound it at one point because he wakes up and he goes out to the goat pen where they were all, you know, locked up or whatever. And you see like two dead goats, and Thomason is like just then waking up, but like the twins are gone too. I couldn't tell if it was the witch was eating the one of the goats or if it was like one of the twins, but the twins are gone and that's unexplained. So maybe that's creepy in a good way.
That's, you know, that's creepy in whatever way. I think it was a goat, 'cause I think both the twins were screaming, and Thomas said was either freaking out or also screaming.
Oh yeah. Maybe you're right. Yeah.
And then it's all blown apart. And then, so who knows what, and I think when you get to sort of the more interesting thematic stuff now, is you've got the dad waking up and being like, wait, what's going on? Like, and I think it's a little unfair, but whatever. The dad is, I think, a little more rational, and the mother is a little more reactionary and a little just plain angry. And you get that why, because she doesn't want to be there. She wants to be back in England, you know, and they at least pay lip service to that. And so dad's kind of like, wait, what's going on here? I don't understand. And then, you know, Black Phillip, the black goat, who's just kind of been sort of vaguely present in the story, gores him and kills him. And you're like, holy shit. Okay. And then the mom comes out, wakes up and is like, what did you do to Thomason? You know, blaming her, going crazy. And then, you know, it turns into a roll around with a knife pseudo self-defense kind of thing. Now, you've just watched it, so you tell me, how does that play out? Does that play out as a proper self-defense accident, or does she give her a couple extra thrusts?
No, it absolutely does, because her mom was just going wild. I can't remember what weapon she... Or maybe she's just trying to choke her out. But,
Oh, right, that's what it is. The mom's choking her, and then she does reach for something and kills her. Like,
no, I think it's all self-defense. Up to that point, I was still feeling like Thomason is, you know, completely innocent. You know, her little sister just kind of threw her under the bus, and, you know... Yeah. I don't know. I was still sympathizing with her, like, and everything, but, yeah, everything has fallen around her, so she's just kind of screwed. So, but then, you know... if you want to wrap up the plot, then she basically just owns up to it. She wants to go talk to Black Phillip, and it kind of manifests into, and I didn't right. remember this from my watch in the theater, but he looks like a pirate, or he looked like Captain Morgan from the rum or whatever.
There was a little bit of that, like,
it
classic,
stupid.
Like,
I was like, what the hell is this?
They only hint at it a bit, but it's definitely like, I think it's sort of like at that point it's going to show its hand entirely and be like, yeah, we're a fairy tale. Like, this is the devil as, you know, like the Puritan guy in black with, you know, something nefarious about him. But I mean, you kind of skipped something in that bit that to me is, I think, probably the most sort of strangely, it's scary, but it's, I don't know. I don't know words for it, but powerful, I guess, is the word I'll use. Is that after the, you know, killing her mother in self-defense or whatnot, everybody being gone, things being in shambles, she's seen what she's seen, she just sort of goes back into the cabin, and I think she kind of takes part of her dress off and puts like a big blanket on and just puts her head down and just goes to sleep for a while, like, because it's the morning, and she sleeps through the whole day in the cabin, and I guess it's fine, and things are
safe.
Yeah,
you're right.
and there's something weird about that, and interesting about that. Like, is she being contemplative? And then she walks out with the light into the goat area, and then she decides to sort of talk to the goat to see if it'll do anything. And then it does, and you find out that she doesn't know how to read, which I guess shouldn't be that surprising, but... And then, yeah, then the goat manifests himself as, you know, clicky-clacky from goat hoofs to the devil manifest. And his proposition to me is an authentic one, given that you've seen how put upon she's been and how isolated they've been, where he's like, do you want to see the world, basically? I mean, he sounds like a freaking creep dude talking to, like, some young girl that he's like, no, baby, I'll make you a star.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally, like, analog for gross guy, you know, trying to pick up a, you know, young woman and promise her all the amazing things.
And would that gross guy picking up a woman, the first thing he offered her was butter? I was like, what the hell? Like, was that precious a resource? Like, or, like,
you gotta
like
turn
chocolate? he's like, I can't remember exactly what he offers her, but he's like, would you like delicious butter or something along those lines?
Yeah. And to see the world and to, like, not be in this role that you're
yeah.
in. You know, once again, back to the feminism thing. But, and so, I don't know. It's tough. I'm back and forth on how credulous I feel her heel turn, if you will, is to being like, okay, yeah, fuck it. I'm going to go enjoy just laughing in the woods and being a witch. And, like, can you blame the way her family treated her? On that, like, is it like all on them, or was there something intrinsic in her maybe to always want to turn? Is it society's fault?
I think it read to me just like you said. I think it's more of a fuck it. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I'm already exiled from the community. What else am I going to do?
Yeah, and it was still like up till that point. It's still, you know, like, I don't know. And so then it shows her, and she walks out into the woods, and the goat's back in goat form and follows her. And then, like, she doesn't even walk that far into the woods till she finds, like, a giant, you know, bonfire with a whole bunch of other, you know, naked ladies of various shapes and sizes all kind of having a good time by the fire, screaming and dancing and levitating and floating. And then she just kind of smiles and looks up and does the same thing. And it's like, that's the end of the movie, you know? And then it goes, The Witch, you know, like with the RoboCop music. No, I don't, it might kind of do something like that.
And then they play Fight for Love.
Yeah, exactly. Fight for Love. Freaking Commando. I don't know. So yeah, it was, we covered the plot and everything. It's just, and where it's effective as a horror movie, where it's maybe a little less so effective as, I think it's more objectively a horror movie than because of those things that they just decide to show, but it's got enough depth and it's got enough thematic elements.
Yeah. And it's great there. Looking like it's great to look at. Like,
yeah. And I want to say, I mean, it's got a certain pace and all that, but I want to say it's also not over long.
No. Like I said, you know, pacing is important. Like when you kill a kid in the first 5 minutes or steal a baby in the first 20 minutes, you know, it doesn't, even if it is 2 hours, it feels like, you know, your standard hour and a half.
Yeah, you're off to the races. And I felt like it was an authentic ending. It made sense. It was kind of an interesting twist on the horror movie trope of nobody left alive.
Yeah.
You know, usually there is the innocent girl that makes it out in the Friday the 13th or those things. But in this case, it's the innocent girl is turned. And so, you know, as Obi-Wan Kenobi logic would tell us, you know, I am correct after a fashion, you know. You know, the witch killed Thomason when she became a witch. And I mean, I think the Film Junk guys even mentioned this, that it's sort of also like an interesting origin story for a character like that. I don't know if I would be super interested in seeing this play out a second time as a sequel, with a sequel kind of mentality into it, you know, with like a different family.
Yeah, I'd be more interested in an anthology sort of thing, some other tale, but in that same period, in that same sort of creepy mood that tells something completely different. But it's a very enjoyable watch. It's certainly impressive, whether you like the outcome or like it a lot. It certainly looks good and does what it's intended to do, which is be very creepy. I think it went up on a rewatch, so I gave it a 4. I don't think it's 5, cool. But it's definitely like a fun watch. I'll probably pick it up again in another couple years and watch it. So
yeah, I think I gave it a 4, and you know, it might have been a 4.25. I'll cheat and use quarter stars sometimes.